Welcome to Finally Alive Radio with pastoral counselor Gary Harris. To find out more, please go to finallyaliveradio.com.
All right, so we're going to go in a different direction here. I thought it was an interesting topic. I'm going to play a clip for you guys. And this is the direction we'll go, not for too long, but just long enough. We won't go too far into this. Well, you just have to hear the audio. That's good enough. So preface it. It's a Jewish rabbi. Already gives you a lot of hints right there. But obviously their take on things are going to be clearly different than ours. So he's going to talk about Psalm 22:16. That's the verse that talks about the dogs are there and then the being pierced. Okay, it's that verse. So
moments of honesty. Well, maybe 10. Psalm 22, verse 16. For dogs have compassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. They pierced my hands and my feet. Obviously, the Christian immediately thinks about the crucifixion of Jesus. Look at the Jewish translation. Ka'ari, like a lion, yodai v'raglai, my hands and my feet. I'm claiming that the word ka'ari means like a lion. The Christian says, no, ka'ari means they pierced. If you have a word in the Bible and you're not clear what it means, the simplest thing to do is go to every other place that word appears, right, and see what it means there. Isaiah chapter 38:13. Like a lion, he breaks all my bones. Ka'ari, ein yishaber kol atzmotai.
Okay, so I think you guys get the point of it. So he is arguing that when it says they pierced, it doesn't mean that. So I think this is a really interesting topic because I looked it up. He's actually right, but we're not done with the story there. So he's got some truth in what he's saying, but we do have to kind of dig into it. So today what I want to stick to is I want to make the argument for him. I want to go into all the details of this because I think it's interesting. It's a really good one. I think, I don't know if Christians, I don't know, I didn't look into this, but I've never heard of this before. So thought it was worth looking into, but I could see how Christians can get, can fall apart or fall for it, you know, whatever you want to call it. So I think it's worth at least going into. And since we just have the habit of going into some language and Hebrew stuff, why not use this too and get into all that? So fun subject. So Rabbi Skobach, that's his name, claiming that Psalm 22:16, rather than saying they have pierced my hands and feet, the reading is actually like a lion, comma, my hands and feet. So totally getting rid of the whole they have pierced part. So it's kind of interesting. So how's he doing this? Let me write down some stuff for you guys here. Okay, so ka'ari. So two words again, like, and then we have the comments there, right? Which is the article the, like the, and this is ari. This actually means lion. Doesn't mean pierced. So that's what we're gonna get into. So that's what he's talking about when he's talking about ka'ari. When he's saying that, that's what he's talking about. And it actually says that. I looked it up in the Hebrew. It actually is spelled just like that. And that's what it says. And there it is. So we're going to just stick to this. We're going to stick to this and let's see where he's going. I'm going to read a whole bunch of different arguments today. And then the following week, we will go through the arguments and I will show you in different ways how there are actually a lot of errors, I think, in how they're doing what they're doing. It's my two cents. So go through some of the arguments here. One of the bigger arguments is this is from the Masoretic text. That's a big deal. That's such a huge deal for them, obviously, right? Why? Because the Masoretic text is what? That's the main Hebrew, Aramaic. That's what they use for the Hebrew and Aramaic text for the Tanakh and other rabbinic, writings of that sort, right? That's the original. That is a big deal. You do not mess with this. It is the most authentic to the Jew. You bring up anything else, you have a problem. The Encyclopedia Britannica, here's a fun one. Masoretic text, this is what it says. From Hebrew, Masoreth, or tradition. Traditional Hebrew text of the Jewish Bible, meticulously assembled and codified and supplied with diacritical marks to enable correct pronunciation. This monumental work was begun around the 6th century AD and completed in the 10th by scholars at Talmudic academies in Babylonia and Palestine, so hints, 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 in an effort to reproduce as far as possible the original text of the Hebrew Old Testament. So they stand on this. You do not mess with their Masoretic text. Speaking of the Masoretic, the King James uses this. American Standard Version uses this. So there are other ones that will use this one. It's not a bad version, but I'll kind of give you a little hint right off the bat. None of them are perfect. So then there's that. Here's another interesting thing. We're talking about Psalm 22:16. Well, New Testament is brings up a lot of Old Testament stuff. It brings up a lot of stuff from the book of Psalms. And interestingly enough, Psalm 22:16 is never quoted in the New Testament. I'm giving you their arguments. Okay, so this specific verse is never quoted. Therefore, how can you, Mr. or Miss Christian, use this verse to represent your Messiah? So you have no basis, quote unquote. Okay, looking at Psalm 22:12, if you want to go there, show you a couple interesting things. Reads, many bulls encompass me, strong bulls of Bashan surround me. They open wide their mouths at me like a ravening and roaring lion. Does the other version say that too? I don't know if that's what you guys have. Does it say something different for verse 13? Roaring lion, okay. This word here, Ariyah, which is a very similar connection to Ari. So it's basically the same word as the idea there. In verse 20, same chapter, verse 20 says, deliver my soul from the sword, my precious life from the power of the dog. Save me from the mouth of the lion, Ariyah. You have rescued me from the horns of the wild oxen. So yet again, there it is, all in the same chapter. This is their argument. How could that one verse, why is that one verse an exception? How are you guys coming up with that, Mr. or Miss Christian? When it clearly says R-E over there and R-E-H, basically the same word that's being used in verse 16. So hope you guys are on the edge of your seat. I want to just put out all of their arguments. Another argument would be, even if it were a misspelling, because this is another way that the people have tried to explain this part away. Karu instead of Kari. What if it's Karu? And the argument against Karu, which actually means dig, it would still make no sense as dig doesn't mean pierce. That's going to be their argument. All right. So I want to read to you, wish I could tell you guys the guy's name. Anyway, but he's a big, huge proponent. He doesn't seem to like Christians very much. He obviously is going to argue away these kinds of things as if Christians are foolish. And let me just read this to you. I'm going to read more than just this part. I'm going to read other parts because I want you to see this guy's mindset when it comes to Christian or Christianese or however you want to put it. So the accounts of the New Testament, the most cherished book of the devout Christian, already display the animus of the early church toward the Jews, portraying them as the people of the devil, cunning, traitorous, corrupt, deceitful, and conspiring. So that is his idea of what the Christians think, that the Jews are the devil. In essence, whatever it is that humanity abhors, that is precisely how the Jews are depicted in the Christian Bible. Without rest, post-canonical Christian literature continued to perpetuate this dark image of the Jew. There can be little doubt as to why Christians believe of the Jews what common sense would forbid them to believe of anyone else. To some extent, Luther and his countless followers who eagerly embraced his shameful message were together willing followers of a body of literature that scandalized, smeared, and ultimately condemned the children of Israel to an unimaginable history. Dr. Gene Scott would say something interesting. He would say, I remember this, I don't think I can quote it verbatim, but the idea was, you're always going to get a different version from the group who lost the war. Does that make sense? You're always going to get the other side of the story. So my take is, this is the other side of the story. This is the guys, if you will, the loser version of history. That's going to be my take. And of course, do I have a bias? Of course I do. I'm a believer of Jesus. That's just the way it is. But I will argue away a couple things here. So it says, moreover, in an effort to distance Christians from a compelling Jewish message, the founders and defenders of Christianity methodically altered selected texts from the Jewish scriptures. So look what he's saying. Quotes, he says, altered Jewish scriptures. This rewriting of Tanakh was not done arbitrarily or subtly. The church quite deliberately tampered with the words of the Jewish scriptures in order to bolster their most startling claim. The Old Testament clearly foretold that Jesus of Nazareth is a Messiah. With this goal in mind, missionaries manipulated, misquoted, mistranslated, and even fabricated verses in Tanakh in order to make Jesus' life fit traditional Jewish messianic perimeters and to make traditional Jewish messianic perimeters fit the life of Jesus. I feel like we've talked about this before. But I don't think there's any proof to what he's saying. And clearly, plus you have four Gospels and you have four different accounts, four different times, four different places of people talking about the same event, and they have so many similarities. There are some differences, but isn't it interesting that they all have the theme? It's kind of on the same page, if that makes sense. So, but anyway, okay, let's just keep going with this guy's argument. So he says, bear in mind, the Jewish scriptures were written in Hebrew, not in 17th century King James English. What has made Christian believers so vulnerable to Bible tampering is that almost none of them can read or understand the Hebrew Bible in its original language. Kind of true, right? Virtually no Christian child in the world is taught the Hebrew language as part of a formal Christian education. Aha! That's us, guys. This is where we, I think, can fit in, where we have some Hebrew language knowledge. As you and countless other Christians earnestly study the authorized version of the Bible, there is a blinding yet prevailing assumption that what you're reading is heaven-breathed. Tragically, it's funny, Timothy actually calls it God-breathed. Just a side note there. Tragically, virtually every Christian in the world reads the translation of men rather than the Word of God. On the other hand, every Jewish child in the world who is enrolled in a Jewish school is taught to read and write Hebrew long before he or she even heard the name of Luther. So notice how he differentiates you, Mr. or Miss Christian, and them. They know Hebrew. You don't. And if you don't, you have no authority over any of this. That is the argument, I think, that he's trying to make. So he is already disqualifying you to even argue against him. He says, unbeknownst to you and parishioners worldwide, the King James Version and numerous other Christian Bible translations were meticulously shaped and painstakingly retrofitted in order to produce a message that would sustain and advance church theology and exegesis. This aggressive rewriting of biblical texts has had a devastating impact on Christians throughout the world who unhesitatingly embrace these corrupt translations. Now, for all the years that I've been reading, you know, this stuff and all these kinds of materials, I haven't read anything of that sort yet. But then again, we're also reading the loser's version of life, of what has happened, of the Messiah coming, and they missed the boat. So I want you guys to see that. I think that's important. It's not to put the person down, but it is where the Jews missed, and that's, thank God, that's also where the Gentiles got to come in. So though we're arguing against him, thank God for him and people who thought like him, because otherwise we probably would have never gotten a chance. So anyway, I think, again, back to God's, if you want to talk about predestination a little bit there, God foreknew these kinds of things were going to happen. So what evangelicals fail to understand, however, is that the passionate resistance of the Jew to the teachings of Christianity has little to do with church's bad manners. Rather, it is the direct result of the church's contrived and therefore implausible message. This stunning conclusion, however, is impossible for Christians to accept without bringing injury to their own faith and worldview. In Christian theology, the Jews are not portrayed as a tribe whose beliefs conflict with the teachings of the church. Quite the contrary, the religion of the Christianity readily concedes that the Jews were God's firstborn, the people who were chosen to receive and protect the divine oracles of God. The spiritual principles of such a priestly nation cannot be dismissed lightly. I want you to notice the argument he's using there. It's very similar to how they would approach Jesus. We have the fathers. We have Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, our fathers. Notice how they use authority. I think it's interesting how they're using authority. It's not so much what you know, it's who we're under. We're the Hebrews. We know best. Who are you to say anything about us? Can't blame you. That's a good argument, but that doesn't mean you're right. Okay? Let's see here. The spiritual principles of such a priestly nation cannot be dismissed lightly. As a result, Christendom systematically engaged in a thorough ad hominem assault against the Jewish people, slandering them as a nefarious demonic nation. It isn't difficult to understand how polemical literature against the Jews became a common feature in church writings. What's interesting is the Old Testament that we have is Jewish, so I don't know how that works. I don't know where he's getting this from. By declaring that the Jews rejects the claims of the church as a result of Christian anti-Semitism, as you insist, or the Jews' spiritual blindness, evangelicals spare themselves the festering anguish that self-searching and self-doubt invariably create. To understand the brazen manner in which Christendom tampered with the Jewish scriptures, let's examine the verse that you insist proves that Jesus is the Messiah. So this is obviously a response to someone else's argument. Psalm 22:16 in the King James Version reads, "Dogs have compassed me, the assembly of the wicked have enclosed me, they pierce my hands and my feet." Understandably, Christians are confident that this passage contains a clear reference to Jesus' crucifixion. He quotes, "Of whom other than Jesus could the psalmist be speaking?" missionaries ask. They insist that the Bible could not be referring to any other person in history but the Savior who bore the marks of the cross. And I think we all believe that, right? So we're all on the same page about that. It says, "Apparently you were so impressed by this argument that you wondered how a rabbi like myself could miss the reference to Jesus' crucifixion. Paradoxically, well-educated Jews are utterly repelled by the manner in which the church rendered the words of Psalm 22:17." And he says 17 because in the Masoretic text, it's verse 17. A Jewish Bible, this verse appears as 22:17. In a Christian Bible, it appears at 22:16. To avoid confusion, this verse will be referenced to 22:17. Okay. To understand how Christian translators rewrote the word of King David, let's examine the original Hebrew words of this verse, the proper translation. 22:17, correct translation. Let's see here. "For dogs have encompassed me, a company of evildoers have enclosed me. Like a lion, they are at my hands and my feet." So it's that last part with the "like a lion." "Like a lion, they are at my hands and my feet." Okay. Notice that the English translation from the original Hebrew does not contain the word "pierced." The King James Version deliberately mistranslated the Hebrew word kari, there it is, as "pierced," rather than "like a lion," thereby drawing the reader to a false conclusion that this psalm is describing the crucifixion. The Hebrew word kari does not mean "pierced," but plainly means "like a lion." The end of Psalm 22:17 therefore properly reads, "Like a lion, they are at my hands and my feet." Had King David wished to write the word "pierced," he would never have used the Hebrew word kari. Instead, he would have written either dakar or ratzah, which are common Hebrew words in the Jewish scriptures. These common words mean to stab or pierce. Needless to say, the phrase, "they pierce my hands and my feet," is a not too ingenious Christian contrivance that appears nowhere in Tanakh. Bear in mind, this stunning mistranslation in the 22nd Psalm was not born out of ignorance. Christian translators were well aware of the correct meaning of the simple Hebrew word. They fully understood the meaning of the word ka'ari and deliberately twisted their translations of this text. So notice the loser's version of what we're doing, okay? Loser's version is we are twisting, we are dabbling, we're messing with their words. How dare we do this, oh you stupid Christians, right? The word ka'ari can be found in many other places in the Jewish scriptures, and they correctly translated ka'ari, like a lion, in all places in Christian Bibles where this word appears, with the exception of Psalm 22, the church's cherished crucifixion psalm. For example, the identical word kari is also found in Isaiah 38:13. In the immediate context of this verse, King Hezekiah is singing a song for deliverance from his grave illness. In the midst of his supplication, he exclaims in Hebrew, and he gives you the Hebrew sentence. Notice that the last word in the phrase, moving from right to left, is the same Hebrew word kari that appears in Psalm 22:17. In this Isaiah text, however, the King James Version correctly translates these words, "I reckon till morning that," as "a lion." On and on it goes. So interesting, even the, you know, what happened there? The King James Version correctly translated other places, other verses, and like Isaiah, let's leave it to Isaiah, let's just stick to his argument. But they didn't in 22:16 for Psalms. So it must be noted that the authors of the New Testament were not responsible for inserting the word, quote-unquote, "pierced" into the text of Psalm 22:17. This verse was tampered with long after the Christian canon was completed. I think it's interesting that he keeps bringing up that we've tampered and we're bad and we think Christians think that they're the devil. Notice the way he's arguing. How is he arguing? Painting the picture, right? You have to paint the picture as Christians as these evil, these horrible people, ill-mannered, you know, or ill-minded. Right? It's all tampering. Ah, here we go. This is the argument that we brought up earlier. As a result, 22:16 is never quoted in the New Testament. Missionaries who insist that the Christian translation of this verse reflects the original words of King David must wonder why there was not one New Testament author who deemed this supposed allusion to the crucifixion worthy of being mentioned in his writings. We've talked about how the poor Jews, they were blinded, and it's still there. It's pretty crazy to see. But anyway, let's keep going here. So a cursory reading of the entire 22nd Psalm reveals the extent to which this verse was subjected to reckless tampering. Throughout this chapter, King David routinely uses an animal motif to describe his enemies. The psalmist's poignant references to the dog and lion are therefore common metaphors employed by the psalmist. In fact, David repeatedly makes reference to the dog and lion both before and after Psalm 22:16. For King David, these menacing beasts symbolize his bitter foes who continuously sought to destroy him. This metaphor, therefore, sets the stage for the moving theme of this chapter. Although David's predicament at times seems hopeless, this faithful king relied on God alone for his deliverance. As the psalmist eagerly looks to God for deliverance from his adversaries, he conveys a timeless message that it is the Almighty alone who can save the faithful in times of tribulation. We looked at 12:13, 20:21. I'll just skip that whole part. Moreover, missionaries are confronted with another vexing problem in their effort to interpolate the words of the psalm into a first century crucifixion story. In the simplest terms, this text that Christians eagerly quote is not a prophecy, nor does it speak of any future event. Of course, a Jewish person would say this. This entire psalm, as well as Psalm 23, 1 through 3 that follows, contains a famous personal prayer in which King David cried out to God from the depths of his pain and anguish, fugitive from his family and former friends who betrayed him. Accordingly, the stirring monologue in this chapter is all in the first person. Fearing that he has been abandoned by God, David implores the Almighty to answer his supplication for help, mitigating any question as to identify of the psalmist. It is explicitly clear from the very first verse of this chapter, the person speaking is King David. Understandably, Trinitarian Christians, you guys and me, are confronted with another staggering problem. Attributing this to anyone other than David, i.e. Jesus, is nonsensical. Oh, guys, you guys are nonsensical. Considering that most Christians deem Jesus and God to be one entity. In the beginning of this chapter, the psalmist cries aloud, my God, why have you forsaken me? Who said that before? Why are you so far from helping me and from the words of my groaning? Oh, my God, I cry in the daytime, but you do not hear, and in the night season, and am not silent. Why would Jesus, whom Trinitarians insist is God, complain that God is so far from helping me? To whom was Jesus complaining? How could God, the first person of the Trinity, not hear the cries of God, the second person of the Trinity? Notice the argument. How can God not hear God? Okay, this is the Jewish perspective. I think this is important. To whom is this supposed God-man complaining? Finally, why would God be complaining to God? The psalmist is confused and bewildered as he beseeches God. So notice, he can't comprehend what, praise God, we are able to comprehend. Is Yahweh God? Yes. Is Jesus God? Yes. How does that make sense? How are they both God? They are. Explain that one away. That's very difficult to explain away, right? But he can't comprehend that. If you can't comprehend that, and not to say that we can comprehend it perfectly, we are talking about something that is outside of our space-time matter, you know, what we understand. So anyway, let's go on with what he says here. Why would Jesus, whom Trinitarians insist is God, complain that God is so far from helping me? So the psalmist is confused and bewildered as he beseeches God, who he believes is silent. He feels as though his supplications were cast aside. Now, you as a believer, Christian believer, hearing what he just said, I hope you understand, and I hope you have the answer, I think, to that already. Let me repeat what he says here. The psalmist is confused and bewildered as he beseeches God, who he believes is silent. He feels as though his supplications were cast aside. Now, if you know Isaiah 53, he had to. The old suffering servant, right? You guys know the chapter. It's right there, right in front of them. And they know this, and they even claim to know this. And they know it so well that they put us down as outsiders. And how dare you even attempt to look at this? But that's the irony here, right? Is that you guys who are so smart and we are so quote-unquote foolish, we get it. That's the crazy part here. So you can thank God for that one. Let's keep going here. If God and Jesus were truly one entity, then how or why would God not understand his own predicament? How can God wonder why God doesn't hear his own prayers? Furthermore, who are God's ancestors? Applying the words of Psalm 22 to Jesus' challenges, even the most fertile imagination places an enormous strain on church teachings. The nagging question that comes to mind is, why did the King James Version translate the Hebrew word kari in Isaiah 38:13 correctly, like a lion, yet deliberately mistranslate this same word as pierced? in 22:16 of Psalms. Clearly, these Christians' translators were well aware of the correct meaning of the word kari, as evidenced by the translation of 38:13. To fully understand why the church felt compelled to revise the 22nd Psalm, it is essential to grasp the central role this famed chapter plays in traditional Christian teachings. The church fathers cherished Psalm 22 as a chapter that explicitly describes in vivid detail the agony of the passion narratives and provides the gospel scripts for Jesus' crucifixion. Segments of the psalm are quoted extensively in the New Testament as a fulfillment of an Old Testament prophecy of the crucifixion, so on and on. So, darn it, I didn't write the guy's name down. He's a rabbi. Can't believe I didn't write his name down. Anyway, but looking at some other rabbis, let's look at what other rabbis say, and these will be much quicker, much shorter little paragraphs here. So this is Rabbi Aryeh Kaplan. He says, like a lion in Hebrew is kari. The fundamentalist Christian interpretation actually changed the spelling of the word from kari to kari. If one then totally ignores the Hebrew grammar, one can twist this to mean he gouged me. Then, as in the King James Version, they make this verse read, they pierce my hands and feet. However, this bears no relation to the original meaning of the verse. Even with the change in spelling, it is a forced translation. Furthermore, there is absolutely no evidence that the psalm is speaking of the Messiah. Thank you, Rabbi. Another one says, many dogs have encompassed me. This refers to Haman's son. So look at what they're doing. They've already got an explanation for it. This is referring to Haman's son. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. This refers to Ahasuerus and his crowd. Kari, my hands and my feet. Rabbi Nehemiah says, they pierced my hands and my feet in the presence of Ahasuerus. Interesting one. It actually agrees with the piercing, but it's telling you it's somebody else who's getting pierced. What do you expect? It's a Jewish rabbi explaining this away. Can't blame him, okay? So I want you guys to understand the mindset that they're coming from, and truly the incorrect aspect. They cannot see Jesus. Even if it's right there, they can't see it. It makes sense, doesn't it? I mean, Jesus was literally right there 2,000 years ago, right in front of them, and they couldn't see it. So why should we expect them to do it any differently with the word? Okay, so just a heads up there. But notice the thoughts, and notice how they've explained it in different ways. One of them was, geez, very elaborate of how the translation doesn't work. This guy says, no, it does say pierced, but it's, we'll explain it away with him and son and all that stuff. It's kind of interesting. Here's a midrash on Psalm 22, for dogs have encompassed me. That is Ham and Son. So this guy says it's Ham and Son too. So Ham and Son have encompassed me. The assembly of the wicked have enclosed me. That is Haman's hosts have enclosed me. Oh, this is interesting. My hands and my feet, they made repulsive. Totally different translation there. According to R. Judah, Esther said, though Ham and Sons practiced sorcery on me, so that in the sight of Ahasuerus, my hands and feet were repulsive. So they actually translated the word pierced, or lion, to repulsive. It's a whole different meaning now. Yet a miracle was wrought for me, and my hands and my feet were made to shine like sapphire. So, on and on. Just wanted to hit the main spots on that one there. Let's see here. Okay, so this one says, this describes Israel in the exile of Babel, surrounded by hostile enemies, with no avenue of escape. This refers to the sons of Haman. So, the rabbis often equated the seed of Amalek with that of a dog. The Amalek with a nation that came to lick the blood of Israel like a bloodthirsty dog. So notice what they've done. They've got their own interpretation to how to explain this verse away. Rabbi Tovia Singer, that was the guy's name. That long thing I just read, Tovia Singer, that was his name. Okay, these ones are just opinion, but I think it just, trying to understand the Jewish mind as best we can, right? So the verse in question, it quotes the verse, the word ka'ari means like a lion, the prefix ka means like. First of all, let's see if like a lion makes sense in context. Well, in the very same verse, we have the imagery of dogs surrounding the psalmist. Earlier, verse 13 says, many bulls surround me, which in verse 14 are described as being like tearing, roaring lions. And later, verse 21 and 22, we see, save my life from the clutches of a dog, deliver me from a lion's mouth, from the horns of wild oxen, rescue me. So the image of a lion in verse 17 fits right in. In my opinion, one has to turn some pretty fancy cartwheels in order to read that verse as a foreshadowing of crucifixion. All right, so that's an opinion. So nice shot at you guys there. Another one here, like a lion, and that fits all the rest of the psalm, which uses a lot of animal imagery, same argument. And no, the DSS does support the typical Christian interpretation. The typical Christian interpretation of Psalm 22:16 is made up entirely, period. This is one of the two major and obviously theological deliberate mistranslation of the Jewish Bible made by Christians, you darn Christians, to support a Christological interpretation. All right, last one here. The correct translation is like a lion, rather than pierced. When the passage is read in its entire context, it is clear that the psalmist David is using poetic and allegorical language to describe his own enemies, comparing them to lions and dogs. He is writing about his present time. There is no prophetic language in this section. The pierced, quote-unquote, translation is a much later fabrication intended to falsely portray the passage as a prophecy of crucifixion. Oh, okay, I'm out of breath. Lots to read. Wanted to share all that with you, but get you to think a little bit. What the heck happened here? And this is great. I mean, I love this stuff because it really got me thinking. And it was a total accident. I found that video and I just watched it. I'm like, huh, let me look it up. And then, oh, wait a minute. He might be right, but he's not. He's not completely right. There's a part that is correct, but there's a big part that isn't correct. So that's what we're going to talk about next week. So
thank you for listening to today's message. 2 Corinthians 9:7 tells us that each one must give as he has decided in his heart, not reluctantly or under compulsion, for God loves a cheerful giver. If this message has been a blessing to you, we ask that you be a cheerful giver to this ministry by going to finallyalive.com/give. We'll meet you again next time as we grow together and learn to be finally alive in Christ.